and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program, faster than an airplane, more powerful than a locomotive, impervious to bullets.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I could wield an Infinity Stone, I would wield the Power Stone, as the purple energy would just really go with my look.
I'm Joanna Robinson. I'm drinking cider. And if I had to pick an Infinity Stone to put in my own personal gauntlet, it would probably be the Reality Stone, because as Dave pointed out to me before we started recording, I would never have to furnish a room again. We are only, and plus, I really should have the Purple Stone because my hair is purple, but that's fine. Dave stole my accessory. That's fine. we are only two of three. We, like, one third of our trio is missing. Neil is not here. So we are doing, like, sort of an unofficial thought bubble by accident on this episode. If you guys listen to our old podcast, Thought Bubble, where Dave and I just Dave nerded out about comics and I asked him dumb person questions. But we can get into why Neil has mysteriously vanished from this podcast a little later on. I didn't mean to take over hosting duties. It's just what I used to do with Thought Bubble. Dave, go for it.
No, I like it because now I get to make some witty comments before handing it over to you for reviews. I just wish I had figured some out before asking. Joanna, do we have any reviews?
Gosh, I sure hope we do, and I definitely was ready to read them. I'm so glad that I have this ready to go.
More vamping.
Don't worry. It's fine.
I know Neil at least saw Infinity War, so there must be some chicanery going on.
It might have killed him, is the point. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Is this a new one? Yeah. Okay, great. This is a new one. All right. This is from Jeff_Fred, two first names that I respect. My favorite podcast, 5 stars. First, I'll start with the review part. These hosts have great chemistry, constantly make me laugh and think about things in a different way. I always wish I could chime in on their conversation, which we'll get to down the line. I think I drunkenly wrote a review comparing them to Parfait. It was aping a classic fitwear review with the sandwich. I can't remember what part of it they all were, but I'll just say that they're all pretty great. So I'm following Dave's rule about giving 5 stars, and I can say whatever I want. The podcast deserves them anyway. So I've recently listened to all your Ready Player One thoughts on fitwear and Little Gold Men, etc., and I had a few things I want to comment on.
Ooh, here we go.
Absolutely, Jeff_Fred, you have earned your platform. I like the movie fine, but I think the fact that you've been bringing up Gamergate and its lack of commenting on that is a pretty insular issue. I'm pretty plugged into the internet. I listen to a bunch of pop culture podcasts, mainly the Joanna and Dave Gonzalez verse, and I had to look up what Gamergate was. Wow, Jeff_Fred. I now realize what a big deal it was, but I can totally see the general population and Steven Spielberg never knowing about it. I think it comes with the territory as writers. You guys are very plugged into Twitter, but the general population isn't. So one question I wanted to ask is, do you think this plugged-in-ness affects your ability to critique things honestly? This has gotten really long, but basically I want to say that Ready Player One had a lot of faults, but I think that particular one isn't one of them. Also, Joanna, you're great, but in what world is Catch Me If You Can overrated? All of my friends, most aren't even movie buffs, praise it all the time for what a masterpiece it is. That's all. Sorry for the long review. At Jeffrey_Welk on Twitter. Yes, I've already fallen down twice. All right, Jeffrey, my doubly fallen brother. The part that I just want to respond to really quickly is the part where you ask if our plugged-in-ness affects our ability to critique things honestly. I don't think it affects our ability to critique things honestly. I think it would be dishonest for us to critique things without our context. That's sort of like what criticism is, right? Dave and I and Neil will all bring our collective life experience and worldview to what we talk about. One thing that I like about this podcast is that we have like very complementary and similar worldviews, we don't have the same worldview. So, you know, we're not on either side of the aisle, but we do challenge each other from time to time, which I like. I think it would be dishonest for me to talk about, say, Ready Player One without the context of Gamergate. That being said, does my plugged-in-ness, as you say it, mean I view Ready Player One differently from someone who might have gone through the last 5 years not thinking about Gamergate? Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, it gives me a different context. But, like, I think for the most part, I mean, it sounds like you, since you listened to Dave's other podcast, my other podcast, you like our perspective. And so that's sort of what you're buying into. If you buy into our perspective, it comes with this added layer of other things. So yeah, critique things honestly. Yes, I think we do critique things differently than some people might. Yes, I think that's also true. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think we definitely do. It's part of, like, I think it's a feature, not a bug, that we do it that way. Although I may use some strong language about what I think people should feel or what I think movies are trying to elicit from me, I don't want that to coming off as being like saying that other viewpoints are invalid. But I think being plugged in doesn't have so much to do with my honesty about Ready Player One, as I think the more I read other people's thoughts on Ready Player One, just people's online experience sort of tinged how they looked at Ready Player One. So if you are aware of Gamergate, or if you were just like a minority or a female online, I think the view of a, you know, sort of utopian non-identity space sort of not being a thing that the film dealt with was what led to our specific reactions in that point. I don't think it necessarily has to do with knowing the news. I think it just has to do with being entirely different people. So I don't think my Ready Player One views have anything to do with being plugged in anything more than my Casablanca views have to do with growing up in Colorado. They're all mixed in together in one gross soup.
Gross soup, the Dave Gonzalez story. I'm going to read one more review because it requested a David Attenborough accent, and I had just enough cider to try to attempt it. All right. Joanna, oh, this is from LJW8993. Joanna, read this as if you were David Attenborough, parenthetical, please and thank you, 5 stars. Behold, three exotic creatures, very different from another and in very different climates, yet they are able to sing the song of my people on a weekly basis. One, a male, has a very pronounced beard, adores onesies, and hails from a very strange place called Texas. Another has a vibrant violet plumage, is the lone female, and a propensity to sing tangential and wordy songs. And lastly, a male, who is so shy that he hides his face with his own hair, but will not hesitate to espouse his knowledge at a moment's notice. Come, friends, during the off-season tour, to see them in their natural habitat, surrounded by all things nerd, at this year's Con of Thrones. But remember, if you do imbibe in adult beverages, there is a chance you will fall. Drink at your own risk. Okay, and then she said, back, I think she or he, whatever, back to normal Joe now. I found the group at last year's con and started listening to them. And yes, I've heard them all. I will sometimes yell, but always laugh at their podcast. Love you guys. I will see you in Dallas. Hashtag don't fall down 2018. Hashtag onesie pub crawl. So thank you, LJW8993. To all you David Attenborough lovers out there, I do apologize for that terrible impression.
No, it's good. I turned down my microphone so that there will only be your voice on the track. And if somebody wants to place that over footage of nature, I think that would be funny.
Okay, fair enough.
I want them to find video of animal with a beard, so at least semi lines up for Neil. I think that would also be funny. But who knows? I mean, I'm semi-inspired by your Westworld podcast eliciting a piano cover of Bare Naked Ladies.
I'm so brilliant. By the way, Dave is doing such a tangential side plug for a project we're both working on. I'm doing a Westworld podcast for Vanity Fair called Still Watching Westworld. So if you want to know, like, my thoughts on Westworld, you can find them there at Decoding Westworld. But anyway, Dave's helping produce that, which means he's editing, like, our podcast for us, which is so nice of him because he has to edit those dang podcasts before he gets to watch the episode. So that's how Dave Gonzalez is experiencing Westworld season 2 this year.
But it's a really practice what you preach sort of season for me. And what I've learned from, since this is a spoilers podcast, I guess this is somewhat useful information. What I've learned from doing it 1 week is what often you guys have the most to talk about on an episode isn't actually the focus of the episode, because the episode itself is so well edited and whatever that, like, it's obvious what the climax points are. So I had completely different climax points in mind when I finally sat down to watch the episode. And so that really proves that execution is paramount to knowing absolutely everything about what you're going to sit down and see. Yeah. There's still a point in seeing things, even if you know absolutely everything about them.
Okay.
Says me.
So we might talk about that a little bit more, but I do want to thank, I mean, this is the wrong platform to do it, but one of our listeners did do a, like, old-timey ragtime piano cover of Bare Naked Ladies 1 week, like, after a joking solicitation for it on Twitter today, and it made my day. So thank you on the wrong podcast to that person.
Well, Neil, who's mysteriously gone and whose presence will be unspoiled later, usually does this section called "We Talked About This Already." I'm going to take it over now. There's, of course, Con of Thrones just coming up in May, Memorial Day weekend in Dallas. Hopefully you have your tickets. We're going to be doing some stuff. We're going to be hanging around, maybe wearing onesies, according to previous review and Neil Miller. And then also, we have some Game of Thrones news, which I will throw to Joanna, who, as always, understands more deeply than the rest of us at this moment.
I'm just a gentle spoiler before, like, I guess a more hardcore spoiler. So if you want to skip ahead, skip ahead. The location of Highgarden is back next season. That's something that our friends at Watchers on the Wall reported. They haven't shot any footage, but they're using the archival footage that they shot of the location in Spain. So I don't know why the Tyrell Castle is back next season, but it will be back. And then this is the big spoiler. You might want to really skip ahead. There are at least two major battles next season. Surprise, surprise. One takes place in the north, but the second one, later, is between Daenerys and Cersei, down south. And so the Unsullied and the Dothraki were seen down south by King's Landing, clashing with Cersei's army. So it's the Battle of the Queens at the back half of the season. I don't know what that means. Like, if the Night King is, like, taken care of midway through the season, that'd be great. We've talked about that, I think, in past speculative seasons. We were like, what if the Night King is, like, gone real early?
Episode 2, Night King's gone. Yeah. We just all fall out.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just three Lord of the Rings endings stretched across 9 hours.
Call the Eagles. So, yeah, that's what we know about Game of Thrones.
So, that's interesting. That's an interesting leak. They're using archival footage they've already shot in the new season. That's a leaky ship to have that sort of information leaking out, but interesting to know. All right. Next, last night, because of CinemaCon, the Las Vegas Festival for Theater Owners, where the studios show off their wares and they're like, hey, book our movies. For some reason, they decide this is a time to debut things to a primarily distributor audience. But that has, you know, led to it becoming a semi-cinematic event, and Sony decided to bestow upon the greater audience of the internet a Venom trailer that apparently, although it was released at the same time the CinemaCon trailer was shown, is different than the CinemaCon trailer. We actually apparently got more finished visual effects in the online trailer, which shows Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock reporter doing some sort of accent as he bonds with a symbiote, as the movie has decided to pronounce symbiote. And
Is that the thing that bothered you the most, the way it's symbiote?
No, because both pronunciations are kind of correct, and I did get laughed at one time in a comic book shop in the early 90s for saying it like Jenny Slate says it. So it didn't bother me as much as that immediately, like, leapt out at my brain. That in the movie seems to primarily be about a motorcycle chase. And we got to see Venom, which is pretty much from the neck up, faithful to his appearance in the comics, including a tongue that Elizabeth Banks tweeted, looks like he's eating a dick. And so that's basically been the reaction to the Sony Venom trailer, as people are kind of like, what's this?
Tweeted that?
Elizabeth Banks says it looks like he's eating a dick.
But Jesus. All right. the call is coming from inside the Hollywood.
It's also weird because it says in association with Marvel instead of Marvel Studios at the beginning. Mm. It's like an altered credit we've never seen before. It's a really weird. The Venom movie is an odd duck.
I was just happy to find out the new amazing voice that Tom Hardy. I mean, I think he's doing two voices, right? I think he's doing the voice of Venom, and he's definitely doing the voice of. Is he Eddie Brock? Is that who he's playing?
He's definitely Eddie Brock. Yeah.
I didn't know if they like had a different character. I was like, what? What was Topher Grace's character's name?
Nope. Same. Yeah. Same character.
All right, Eddie Brock, who sounds like he's from Brooklyn. But
he sounds like Brooklyn Rain Man is how I've been describing him.
Oh, Brooklyn Rain Man, but lives in San Francisco. I do love a San Francisco set movie. They've apparently built their big symbiote headquarter research lab over on the headland, the Marin Headlands. So that's fun. That's the same route. Okay, this is sorry. I'm off on a tangent as which is on brand for me. But in Ant-Man, every time I watch Ant-Man, which is also set in San Francisco, I laugh because in order to get back from San Quentin, Paul Rudd comes through the Headlands. It's like it's a place that people love to put things in movies because from the Headlands you can see the bridge and it's a beautiful view. That's also like where the apes settle in Planet of the Apes. Like it's a beautiful view of the bridge, but there's nothing there but like a beautiful park of wildland. So like to put anything there to make it a route back from anything is wrong. It's all wrong if you're a San Francisco resident. All right, that's I'm done with my San Francisco rant. You're welcome.
No, that's good. I mean, it's obvious to me that he's a New Yorker living in San Francisco, so they don't have to deal with the fact that he could have known Spider-Man at one point, but is on a separate coast where we don't have to think about that.
All right.
I mean, I don't think Spider-Man's in this movie, but I do think that in Heart of Hearts, Sony needs to keep an artery as close to the Spider-Man heart as possible so Marvel doesn't think about removing it behind their back. That's a weird way to put it, but I think that's the only way I could put it without pointing fingers at people I don't know that are guilty or not. So, Venom.
Definitely listen to this podcast.
Venom. Mm. It's coming. We'll be talking about it more. It's going to be crazy. Enjoy all the memes on Twitter. All right. Guys, when we come back, we're going to be talking about Avengers Infinity War. There's not going to be a spoiler-free section for this movie. We're guessing if you're listening to this podcast, we've timed it for release so that you've seen the movie. This movie is the kind of movie that is immediately after it ends, you're going to want to either think about it or talk about it. We're here for that. We're not here for people who have yet to see the movie. That is your spoiler warning. Everything after will assume at least that you've seen Avengers Infinity War. There will be a second warning in case we go beyond that, but just know going forward, go see the movie, or at least make peace with yourself that you're never going to see the movie. I think those are the two things.
Okay. Right. So, are you ready? Are they ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Okay, so we're going to start with... I don't know which one of us is going to guide this. I'll start. We're going to start with overall impressions. I did solicit some questions on Twitter at the last second, like panicking that Neil wasn't here, and Neil usually provides a structure. So I was like, oh God, dear God, listeners, provide a structure.
Well, we had a podcast ready to go, and there were three of us, and then somebody snapped, and now there are two of us.
Oh, yeah.
And we just have to go on now in a world that possibly never had Neil in it.
Wow. Now you can make that joke.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's... Okay, we're going to talk about that later. But so the first section here, we're going to just talk about overall impressions, though spoilers are allowed, for this movie. And to guide us sort of on that track, I have a question from one of our listeners, Francis, a friend of mine, who asks basically how Infinity War compares to Ultron. Like, both had similar jobs to do in terms of a big team up, like heavy lifting, pivoting to like a new... not quite a new phase, but a new thing. You and I, when we used to just do the thought bubble, the two of us, we did talk about Ultron, and like you liked it better than I did because you liked seeing like where all of those strings were and what they were trying to set up and, you know, and that sort of stuff. And I thought Ultron was a big disaster because it did that at the cost of, like, the characters in the story and that sort of thing. So
yeah, I think this one actually resolves Age of Ultron more than it resolves Phase 3 as a movie. Like, I think the primary function of Infinity War was to sort of be the part three to a trilogy that became a quadrilogy.
And are you talking about that specifically because, like, this is the payoff for Vision, or what makes
I think it's the payoff for Vision. I think it's the payoff for Tony's internal, like, playing about what degree he can protect people. I think it's a payoff for the Hulkbuster armor. I think it's a payoff for that's probably it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
The Sokovia Accords.
I don't think it's, like, not so much that, but, like, in hindsight, each Avengers movie has a villain who has a reason to subjugate, then make extinct, then obliterate half of humanity for the good of something. So it's sort of, Infinity War is the escalation of the Avengers question of what level event brings out the team of superheroes. And I think, like, this is the master level event. Even if Marvel goes on to do, like, three more phases, I don't think we're going to have this amount of heroes in an Avengers movie, because as we've seen now that we've seen Infinity War wasn't even big enough to hold all the Avengers. So I think this is, like, peak moment.
Before we... I kind of regret that you and I had, like, a really long chat after the movie got out, and I don't regret that because we were excited. We wanted to, like, talk to each other. We had, like, a text chat, but knowing now that, like, the conversation we're having now is, like, that conversation but on air versus, like, if we had had Neil in the mix, I regret it a little bit. But I do know that you told me that you felt like this was a B minus movie with A moments.
A B movie with A moments. I might have said B minus, but just not to be confused with, like, B, like a 70s, like a
cult,
B movie.
Cult movie. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, no, this is definitely made at the top of what blockbuster filmmaking can accomplish, but it's not a revisitable movie, just like I don't think Age of Ultron is a revisitable movie. Or if it is, it has to be put into context by Avengers 4, which is going to end up being, like, the bold choice that people are going to be talking about. Probably the people tuning into the podcast are immediately thinking about, I know it's the most interesting business decision Marvel's made in a while, in a, you know, history of us questioning why every movie is doing what it is for the greater good.
Yeah.
It's weird to have this one have the media rollout that it did, and then sort of give the indication that this is the status quo for a year. So I don't know, like, they can't really give information about what happens after Avengers 4 until Avengers 4 comes out. So, like, they said they weren't going to Hall H, and I was like, that sounds stupid. It sounds like they're avoiding something. And now I'm like, is that really bold? Is that the thing that should be done? Is it, have we grown to accept Marvel movies as such a fabric of our popular culture that they can press pause, but not like Lord of the Rings, where there's at least source material that we know we're going off of, but more like a Star Wars or a Back to the Future Part 2, where we don't really know what the future holds. Star Wars has been able to do it, but that's, like, I don't know, like, the franchise of giant movie-making franchises. Marvel still, I think, has just managed to turn blockbuster movie going into more like what buying comic books is like.
Yeah.
Where there are these large event things, and everybody wants to get together and watch them, and they become cultural events, but the large event things are never going to be the best of them. The moment that the Avengers circle up in the Battle of New York is, like, tantamount to the T-Rex stepping out in, like, the rain of the Jurassic Park. It's like a cinematic moment that exists independent of these franchises that are trying to tell stories and trying to recapture that moment. I don't think Infinity War has a gigantic cinematic moment that's going to make it memorable for all time, but it does have a lot of moments for fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe that really worked for me. And so at the end of it, the bold choice they make is one of those moments. It really works for me, even if it does sort of tie into something people don't like about comic books, which is that no one stays dead.
The a bunch of people asked me as soon as I got out of the movie, like, what I thought of it. And the number one response I had was, like, surprisingly coherent. and I think especially coming off of Justice League, I mean, I really am not here to, like, just trash DC and raise Marvel up, but I couldn't help but think of Justice League in a number of ways while watching this. And the way in which Justice League, like, hops around and just feels really sloppy and incoherent as it does it, whereas this felt just, like, incredibly controlled, which I respected, in a way that Ultron didn't. And also, the room it found, I mean, it's a long-ass movie. It's 2 hours, 40 minutes. It's insane. I had to pee for, like, an hour and a half. And I went pee before the movie. So, like, just like be prepared for that. But the room that they found to try to give us really to go deep emotionally for these characters, I really valued. I think Justice League tried that, but it didn't like really get it off the ground. But in this, they had so much to do, and there's some, they didn't have room to do it for everyone, but there's some characters they didn't have to do that for. Like, I mentioned this to you off air, but I think like Cap and Black Widow and Black Panther and a few other characters, like, you know, like basically all of Wakanda, like some characters can just show up and they know, Marvel knows they've done the work already, that they're just going to show up and you're like, oh, I care about what happens to them. Like, I don't need a story pegged to this story to care. They found that time though for like Thor, and then they really found that time for Thanos. And I think that that's what really makes this movie work. I mean, once again, to bring it back to Justice League, like everything that Justice League did wrong with Steppenwolf, I think they did right with Thanos. And we'll get to the visual effects actually in the very next section. But that emotional core that they tried to find, they had to sweat a little bit to get there with Scarlet Witch and Vision, because we didn't have, like, besides, like, I don't know, a paprikash scene in Civil War, we didn't have like a lot to build on there, but they tried really hard to get us there. And I was impressed with them feeling like that was important enough. They didn't just need to do like smashy punch. They tried to make it a character piece as well. Sometimes successfully, sometimes not, but like more successfully than not, I think. So I quite liked it. Should we roll to the pixels and polygons?
Oh, sure.
All right. I don't know if you guys know this, but Dave here is an expert on CGI and pixels and polygons. I am a notorious hater of pixels and polygons and CGI. So I'm just going to go first and say there are things that I think are really bad in this movie. Namely, what are they called? The Black Order? Is that what they're called? The Children of Thanos?
I think they're called both things in the actual movie.
The Black Order, the Children of Thanos, the henchmen of Thanos, the cultists. One of them is referred to by the Russo brothers, as the hype man of Thanos. Mixed effect. Some of them looked good, and some of them looked really, really bad, I thought. Really bad. Thanos, however, I thought looked really good. And for how stupid Thanos has looked in other movies, they just did a really, 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 really good job of zeroing in on the Brolin features, Josh Brolin, the actor behind the performance, really, really making that work. There are some ways in which he moved when he walked that looked a little hinky to me. But overall, I mean, I'm going to anger Dave right now and say, like, way better than Snoke. As far as I'm concerned. You're welcome. Dave, you want to give us some... and if you've watched through the whole credits, which I'm sure you did because you wanted to stay to the end of credits, my friend Vince Mancini, who writes for Uproxx, leaned over to me while the credits were rolling. He's like, imagine paying every single one of those people a living wage and how much money that takes. There are so many effects and like sound design, all those people, like all the below the line people, so many names in the credits for those people. So it was really like ILM, Lola, all those people doing their job. Dave, Polly Gonzalez, what do you think?
Well, movies are done for bid, so let's hope they all got paid a living wage. My hearts are with you, visual effects artists. Yeah, I think it's okay. Having read the Infinity comic book arc, I know the names of all these characters, so I can say Proxima Midnight wasn't good. That's the Spear Lady.
Voiced by a very talented actress, Carrie Coon, but all the Carrie Coon in the world could not make that work very well.
Yeah, there's just something about the way she was treated with her weight. I didn't know. So the problem, they needed somebody that wasn't Thanos so that when Thanos does show up, it's a big deal to jump around and, you know, grab all these things. So I get why they're in there. You don't just want faceless Chitauri, even though there are faceless Chitauri and then the three-armed Super Chitauri or whatever they're called. You want those to be foot soldiers. I get it. So I get that there are, have to be like medium ones. The problem is that they gave us medium ones and each medium person had a different power. And then not all of them got named and then not all of their powers were well defined. So I don't know if Proxima Midnight's power is that she kind of like defies gravity sometimes, or if that was just the CGI being like, well, we filmed this really good action scene with these flesh and blood actresses, and now we need to insert their opponent, also, you know, blah.
They did that thing that I hate. I really did like this movie, guys, but they did that thing that I hate when they have a female villain fight female superheroes. Like, can't have a dude punching Proxima Midnight. You gotta have only ladies hit her. So.
Well, that's because... Black Widow almost killed Corvus Glaive, who his name isn't said, but he's the best named of all four of them, Corvus Glaive, who has a glaive that he uses to try to pry the Soul Stone. This is why you had me around on this podcast, Joanna.
To glaive. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, I mean, that didn't bother me, but yes, that does have a moment, a female battle side moment in the final battle. But those two characters, I think, really weren't designed well.
Ebony Black, Maw, however.
Ebony Maw, I didn't mind so much. There we go. I think it's because it was just human enough, but then also, like, off-human enough. I like he had, like, double chins in addition to, like, his fishy face. And then he was sort of, like, that pompous guy. But then also he has, like, sort of indeterminate... floaty powers, which they try to give some definition, but not enough definition necessarily, which is thankful they show him freezing to death. Otherwise, I would have been like, can he fly in space? I don't know.
Leia
I would have told you, I would have told you Thor would have suffocated before this movie, but apparently that's not a thing either.
Ebony Maw, the fish-faced henchman, Ebony Maw is the one the Russos referred to as Thanos' hype man. I love that actor's performance. We talked about this before we started recording. I'm going to look up his name. But I like Ebony Maw's, like, powers are maybe not perfectly defined, but his reigning... defining quality is just like completely unbothered, but he's just so casual with everything he does. The actor's Tom Von Lawler, and for a while I was watching it, I was like, is that Donald Gleason doing kind of a Hux thing? But no, he's an Irish actor, Tom Von Lawler, who is very famous in Ireland for this TV show Love Hate, a big deal in Ireland, and they cast him. I thought he did a great job because he did the mocap performance and the voice, and just like the very casual way that he was just like taking down Iron Man was great. It was great. I really liked it. Other Pixel stuff.
Black Dwarf, the final of the children.
Yeah.
Is really just they had enough time to learn from making the Abomination and the Incredible Hulk to not fuck with comic book designs for big hulking masses and just make it on screen and you'll be fine. So Black Dwarf didn't matter, so he looked fine.
Let's talk about Thanos.
Let's. Really good, yeah. There's a good way to facial map him. They've softened his eye and brow from the Guardians appearance and spent a lot more time adding textures to his skin. So what used to be only craggy chin is now face full of pores.
Yeah, the pores.
Tears can move around. and wrinkle lines from having aged and being making frowny expressions. So I dig it. We're never going to be able to look at him smiling at the end of Avengers. It's going to look like the Lost in Space camouflage creature from 1998 for us from now on. It's like a stupid boxy tooth, dark purple. Yes, blarp. Anyway, Thanos looks really good. Surprise, Hugo Weaving also, I think, is a completely digital makeup, which also looks good. I would say it's a digital makeup because also more texture on the face, which definitely happens when you're not using a prosthetic, unless you make a really detailed prosthetic, which I doubt that happened.
Did you know Red Skull / Hugo Weaving was in this movie?
Nope. I did before I saw it, but not until like hours before I saw it.
I got really excited because like he comes floating forward and he's got the hood up and I was like, it's got to be someone we know. It's got to be someone we know. Who is it? Who is it? And he took the hood back and I was like, it's Hugo Weaving. I got so excited. And kind of knowing,
I chuckled when I heard his voice when he was like floating down. I'm like, they gave him fucking Lord of the Rings shit. Here comes Elrond.
I was going to say this for later, but I will say it now. I feel like his accent was a little less than it was in Captain America. It was less whatever like weird Southern German Austrian thing that he was doing in Captain America. Also, rest in peace, Scarlet Witch's accent, which I guess we're meant to think that Elizabeth Olsen... Like, here's what I thought. When it opened and it's Scarlet Witch, Elizabeth Olsen, and Paul Bettany as the humanoid version of Vision, I was like, okay, in their fantasy, which is aided by, like, whatever, her reality-bending thing or his reality-bending thing, he looks like Paul Bettany, not a purple-faced Vision. And her accent is gone. And then I was like, but once their fantasy is broken, she'll have the accent back. No, I guess like maybe, what's her name? What's her like real name again? Wanda. I guess Wanda spent the last 2 years like working to get rid of that accent.
Sokovian accent?
Because Sokovian accent was just gone with no explanation whatsoever. All right. Okay. So those, I mean, is there anything else we want to talk about in terms of pixels and polygons? I think I was going to be surprised about how into Thanos I was, but I really think it has to do with performance and pores. Pores and like a shadow, like 5 o'clock shadow, 5 o'clock shadow, pores, Brolin. Those are the three keys to the success here, I think.
I guess if we're going to really quickly do that, I'm unimpressed by the space settings in this movie.
Like Titan or...
Other planet, Vormir. Or no, back going back to nowhere, and even though we do like you know some huge reality stone wipes in these locations, I'm just not impressed by their design necessarily. I guess I've really been spoiled by Guardians of the Galaxy being the space one, and that also being the one where the crazy stuff gets to happen, because not crazy space. Not as interesting.
All right. This next question comes from Hiren Patel on Twitter, who asks us if there's ever been a two-part movie that we've enjoyed. And then I just like very briefly tried to brainstorm some two-part movies. And all I came up with off the top of my head were Deathly Hallows and Breaking Dawn. Are there more recent like book? Oh, Hunger Games, I guess. That was terrible. Anything else? Any other book franchises that have been The Hobbit's unnecessarily three movies, not unnecessarily two movies. Anything else that's been like split into two movies? Like you see one knowing that a part two is coming? Feels like a recent trend, right?
Sort of. I mean, they're like animated versions of Lord of the Rings, I think, that are also multi-parters just because of budgetary reasons. But yeah, mostly this is a cinematic thing that's happened to draw out adaptations of stuff in the recent past because they're really tough to do as movies. Why would you take a risk on one movie that has to have a sequel?
That's
why it's sort of like Back to the Future Part 2 when it did it and then seamlessly led into Part 3. That's not like a two-part movie, but that was them being like in the 80s when franchises were just sort of like beginning to be a thing, be like, hey, maybe we could just connect these two budgetarily and sell them two movies at once.
So I will say, of all those, and I forgot one really important one, but of all of those, Harry Potter is the only one that, like, I think I was annoyed by it when I first saw it, like when I had to wait. But in subsequent years, when I've like rewatched the whole series, I like part one and two. But like usually, I'm just watching them back to back, so it just feels like sort of a long story.
Harry Potter was interesting because I was also mad after the first movie, and then after the second movie, I loved it. And then I was like, actually, you know what though? That second movie is not really a movie. It's like a whole bunch of weird climaxes strung together. And then I went back and I watched the first movie. And I'm like, you know what? The first movie is actually a movie. Huh. So I think that ends up, I don't know if I want to say that, because that first movie does have like a whole section about camping that, as a storyteller, I'm like, but why though?
Well, that's the book's fault, not the movie's fault.
Fair.
And there's a bank heist in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
That I like. All right, the best example, the one that I always forget about when this subject comes up, is Kill Bill, which was, I think, shot as one movie and then Tarantino split it into two to avoid having to make like one short movie. Those movies, you know, all the like terrible onset treatment of Uma Thurman aside, those movies work very well for me as a companion piece of like, we don't need to work like the bride, wherever the bride ends up at the end of part one, it doesn't feel like, I don't know, a cheap cliffhanger or anything like that. But it does, like, no matter what you're talking about in terms of two-part movies, usually in the context of a larger franchise, it is sort of the televivication of movies, right? You know, mm-hmm. Like,
ooh, you just reminded me of another one. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, the what is it? It's not Bollywood. Tollywood movie, Bahubali, which comes in two parts, both the beginning and the conclusion, which are both amazing, even though they're both like Avengers Infinity War length movies. but yeah, that's a recent two-part movie that I've enjoyed. But probably for the same reasons, if I enjoy Avengers Infinity War as a two-part movie, I would enjoy Avengers 3 and 4, because together they're just like an obscenely crazy build and then an obscenely crazy sustain. So like the second Bahubali movie is just like dropped in the middle of a plot that you were left off with, like with barely a cliffhanger, and just steaming ahead as if you never left the theater. I think that could really work for Avengers 4, because I, at least it feels like at the end of Avengers Infinity War that we're halfway through everybody's arc.
Yeah. I guess that answers, maybe sort of answers my question of like, do we think of this as a two-part movie? So like Marvel took this step, I don't know, whatever, a year, 2 years ago, where they were like, hey, Avengers 4, no, a while ago, where they're like, Avengers 4 is untitled and we're not calling it Infinity War Part 2. It's not Infinity War Part 1, Infinity War Part 2. We're no longer calling it that. It's Infinity War and then Avengers 4 as yet titled, which could be like, you know, Choose Your Own Adventure, the resurrection of, what do you think is going to be, if you wanted to hazard a stupid guess right now?
Infinity Gauntlet.
Okay.
I mean, it's a boring answer, but it is one that Zoe Saldana said once, and then...
Oh, did she?
Everybody made sure she never said it again.
And then they killed her in this movie. No. but do we even think of this as a two-part movie? I mean, like, I would say yes. There was a point, you know, Dave likes to talk to me about the various things he knows or thinks he knows before a movie, and at one point he's like, I'm not even sure Thanos is in Avengers 4. And, you know, we'll get to more in sort of like a deep spoiler section later. We'll get to more of like what we think about Avengers 4. But like, I think if Thanos hadn't been in Avengers 4, I'd be willing to think of it as like not a two-part movie. But if Thanos is in Avengers 4, like if we're carrying the same villain over to Avengers 4, then I think it is a two-part movie. And we will see if we like it when all is said and done. All right. This is my question. Did not come from a Twitter question. What is the thing you, Dave, were most surprised by?
What was the thing I was most surprised by?
Given how you know everything.
The thing I was most surprised by, like, in the theater?
I mean, I guess in the theater or, like, leading up to it, a rumor you heard where you're like, really?
Oh, so just, like, at any point, most surprised by.
Well, let's do both. Leading up to and then in the theater.
Leading up to, I guess the biggest surprise is, leading up to the biggest surprise has to be when someone told me last night that Red Skull was in it. And I was like, the fuck? Like, because the way I got to that question was, they're like, do you have any questions? And I'm like, is the Soul Stone in this movie? And the answer I got was, Red Skull gives it to Thanos on some weirdly named planet. And I'm like, wait, what? And then I was like, you know what? Don't tell me any more than that. That seems like enough. And then during the movie, the biggest surprise was Thanos axe in chest disappearing into a portal with the Infinity Gauntlet before ending up at a lakeside, because I had just assumed that when he snapped his fingers and he went into Gamora vision, that, like, occasionally when the Infinity Stones have been attempted to be used by somebody in the comics, being used improperly or without full power would redistribute the stones all throughout the galaxy. So in a world where in a world where I thought Thanos may not be in Avengers 4, he would have, yes, altered reality, but in doing that, re-spread the stones and sort of ended up on a happy sub-reality by himself. But apparently, he portals himself out of there, so there's still a gauntlet, and there's still a Thanos, and all the stones are still in one place, so...
It's weird that we got, like, a glimpse of Thanos afterlife, which is what it seemed like. And then, JK, he's not dead, sort of thing. You know what I mean? I guess we're going to have a lot of JK, he's not dead. For me, I did not know until he took back that hood that the Red Skull was in the movie. We already talked about that. I already got really excited talking about that. I don't know what planet I was on. I guess I just wasn't, like, looking at spoilers for this movie. I didn't know Peter Dinklage was in this movie, to be honest with you.
And what?
I don't know why.
I'm sure we've talked about it, like, on this podcast.
I don't know why I didn't know. I don't know what to tell you. I think Peter Dinklage is terrible in this movie. I think the whole thing is terrible. I think it's terrible that they had him do the Tyrion voice when, like, the Tyrion accent's not good, and the only reason, like, he gets away with it on the show is because Tyrion's lines are so clever. This guy does not have those clever lines, and so it's just, like, the terrible Tyrion accent. Yeah, so I don't know. I was like, there was this big guy, and then I was like, what the fuck? It's Peter Dinklage. I felt like a little babe in the woods. I was like, because when that happened, when I was like, holy shit, it's Peter Dinklage, I was like, this is definitely something I should have known already.
Yep.
And then I guess I wasn't surprised by this. I think I was the least surprised. Like, Dave kept telling me, like, the movie ends with Thanos in advance of the movie. You kept telling me the movie ends with Thanos snapping his fingers and, like, half of existence blinking out. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And then I watched the movie and they just, like, mentioned the snap, like, three times throughout the movie. I was like, oh, it's definitely up. Oh, it's on.
He could just snap his fingers.
They keep bringing it up. It's definitely happening. So, yeah, that's, I mean, I hate to let you all down by the fact that I didn't know Peter Dinklage was in this movie, but I did not. All right. What films / characters? Oh, and I guess I was surprised by Pepper surviving, because I knew, like, we felt very confident going in that Loki was definitely going to die. You had told me that Gamora was probably going to die, but I'm not counting the people who turned to ash, because we all know that's not permanent. But in terms of people dying, I definitely thought Pepper was going to die, especially when, like, she shows up and, like, she and Tony are like, we're getting married. I mean, maybe he'll come back and Pepper's just Ash, or maybe he won't remember her. We're going to talk about that.
No. All people who read Shakespeare know that we end with the wedding of Tony and Pepper Potts, right?
You think Tony is surviving to the end of Avengers 4 and then is, never mind. We're going to talk about this later. Okay.
Jackson, you end with a wedding is what I'm saying.
@JackSinClair says, what Hamlet doesn't end with a wedding. Okay. What film/characters do you see being or want to see be the big movies in the MCU in the next 5 years? I guess this is something we'll probably talk about a little bit more in our like more spoilery section. But of all the characters that I am like really excited to see do more things, I mean, like the no duh answer is like everything Wakanda based, right? But also, I mean, I know you weren't such a huge fan of Homecoming, but watching Tom Holland in this movie, I'm just like, I really love Tom Holland. I think he's great in this role, and I really want to like see more of him. Which I will, obviously. I like Stephen Strange in this movie, and I liked him a lot in Ragnarok. I don't really care that much about another Stephen Strange movie, though. So those are sort of my thoughts of like the characters that we know probably have upcoming films. Dave, what do you think?
Well, good news is all the ones you mentioned are at least getting sequels.
Right.
So I guess like beyond that, if I were to, I don't think anyone's going to make a huge, spin-off from Infinity War. But if you were going to do it, you spin Nova off from however Thanos got the Power Stone, which is completely not in the movie. Glenn Close isn't in the movie. Nova Corps isn't in the movie.
John C. Reilly is not in the movie.
Yep. They mentioned that he got it off screen before the movie starts. That sounds like where Nova, the hero, starts.
Yeah, because
he's a... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Well, did you already mention that like Feige was like, no, Kevin Feige was like, Nova's on our board of like maybe soon characters?
No, that also happened during the junket this weekend.
Yeah, yes. And like we know that Marvel is looking to sort of expand into the cosmic sector. James Gunn gets an executive producer, like Jon Favreau and James Gunn get executive producer credits on this. I think Gunn is in like a sort of advisory capacity. But anyway.
Gunn actually wrote all the actual dialogue for the Guardians.
Oh, good. Maybe we'll get to Star-Lord. Motherfucker, Star-Lord. Can I just say it? No, I'm just going to say it now. Star-Lord has been like one of my least favorite. Like, not that I think Pratt is doing a bad job. And you said this to me off pod that like this is the character, but like I fucking hate Star-Lord. I think Star-Lord sucks. And when we get to this point where everyone's working together, and I know it's not going to work because I know Thanos is not going to be defeated here on Titan by our team doing their damnedest. I know someone's going to fuck up, and it's very clear that it's going to be Star-Lord. And like 10% of my brain was like, don't do it. But 90% of my brain is like, I knew it would be you. I knew it would be you, Peter Quill. You dumbass motherfucker. The gauntlet was almost off. How could you? You are responsible for all of this. I'm going to lay it all on you, even though that's not fair. He's like my Catelyn Stark. I'm blaming it all on him. So, yeah.
See, in that moment, I was like, why are you talking to him? Why aren't you just ceaselessly punching him in the head? That's what I would do if Thanos was even, like, for a second not trying to punch me in the head.
If Thanos
I would
has
be punching
his, like,
him in the head.
Throat exposed, and Gamora already showed Peter that you can just stab him in the throat and it's fine. You know, like... Also, that the part where he kills Gamora, I don't know if it's because you had told me that Gamora probably was going to die. That was like a weird moment where I was like, Gamora, why are you monologuing when we know the answer to this? Like, it didn't feel like a surprise. Maybe it'll be a surprise to people who don't know, like, didn't hear from you that Gamora's going to die. But, like... you know, when she's like, ha ha, the monologue, the universe has defeated you, monologue, because, conclusion, you don't love anything. And I'm like, girl, duh, you're gonna die right now. Okay, anyway.
But that's the reveal that he loved her. And then we had to get in with the next stabbing scene, the reveal that she loved him.
But that was
clear. Wait, I don't think it was clear. I don't think that was clear. I mean, Thanos is... 90% portrayal. We don't get a ton of information about him. His backstory is he was a potential genocidal dictator and nobody listened to him. And the planet fell into disarray. And so now he's like, but there, A to C means that therefore B must be in between them. I have to kill everybody. And it's like,
but like,
I like
storytelling.
I like it was an imposing force. This movie doesn't have time for stakes, which is like the weirdest thing about it. Is it's like, show up, fights Hulk. Oh man, he's super strong. Didn't kill Thor though. Maybe he's gonna let Loki live. Oh nope, killed Loki and Heimdall. Good to know. And then
that's interesting.
I really
disagree in terms of like we felt like we knew Loki was gonna die right at the beginning because we needed a show of force from Thanos to be like, oh fuck. Right. And it's not just enough for him to like beat Thor to a pulp and shoot him into space. I am a little disappointed that the thing happened that we were hoping wouldn't happen, which is like it seems like all the Asgardians died. True, we didn't see Korg, and I guess like I think Taika said that like Korg is gonna be in other movies or something like that. So like the rock creature from Ragnarok, like maybe he escaped with a pod full of like refugee Asgardians, but it looked like all the Asgardians died. And saving the Asgardians was the entire point of Thor Ragnarok. And so, like, this undoes the whole, like, mission of Thor Ragnarok. But, like, Thanos showing up and not only killing Heimdall, bummer, but killing Loki in such a, like, gruesome, I mean, like, just throttling him in a way that, like, really, it looked great. And Hiddleston did a great job with it. And Hemsworth really sold the stakes of it. I thought that did a good, you know, like, conveniently, well, here's another thing I'll say. I'm really glad that Heimdall, like, what do you call it on Star Trek? Like, beamed. Beamed Hulk out of there via the Bifrost, because, like, it really bothered me in the trailer that the Hulk just lands in the Sanctum, and I was like, what a goddamn coincidence. But if he gets there through the Bifrost, I'm like, okay, I'll buy that. Oh, that's okay. Anyway, I think I'm off my point. But I think
he should have been the Soul Stone, goddammit.
I know. I think there are stakes. I think there are stakes for a few things. There are stakes for Thor, like that scene with Thor and Rocket later, I think is a really good job of like the toll that this has taken on Thor and like why we believe that he would put himself in the like direct beam of a star in order to do this thing, not just because he's a big damn hero, but because of other reasons. Stakes for Gamora, the Gamora and Nebula relationship still like makes sense to me in a stakes way. Even the like mentor-mentee relationship between Tony and Peter, like of all the people vanishing to ash, I feel like Peter was the one that like hit the hardest, harder than Bucky. Like you didn't get a huge like Bucky cap thing, you know what
it's
I mean?
It's because he said he didn't want to. That's what I've concluded by texting with people who have been like, but isn't it cheap? Aren't they just cheap comic book deaths? And I'm like, yeah, but even as a person who knows they're cheap comic book deaths, Spider-Man going, Mr. Stark, I don't want to, as he's dissolving, is heartbreaking.
It's awful.
Coming from Tom Holland.
Also, it's a kid. It's a teen. He's in the arms of this, like, you know, mentor figure. But what I'm just saying is, like, they didn't even, like, they didn't give us that with Cap and Bucky, who have even more of a foundation for like, this could be traumatizing for Cap to watch Bucky dissolve after all they've been through together. You know what I mean? But like, yeah, to have Tom Holland, a kid, saying he didn't like pulling a David Tennant in Doctor Who and saying he doesn't want to go as he like fades to ash. I think the most shocking, I mean, I was on the set of Avengers 4, so I knew some things about some things. I will tell you, I will be that forthright with you. It was still like, and even though we know he's not gone forever and whatever, it was still alarming. Like, you see T'Challa go up to Okoye and, like, you're like, oh, she's about to go. And then he goes when she grabs for his forearm. And you're like, not T'Challa. That was a pretty good one. But I think, yeah, Spidey and Peter Parker and Tony Stark. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, those are stakes, right? Like, the whole time Tony's like, go home, kid. Go home, kid. And then he's there, and then he dies. And I mean, that's the when we were overanalyzing the trailer, and we had that shot of Tony looking so defeated and crying. Like, we find out now that it's because like Strange traded the time stone for Tony's life because, I mean, he saw the end game, he saw the future, and he knows that Tony needs to be alive, so that's why he did that. But, like, Tony just looks so, like, upset that his life has been traded for this thing. That's the shot in the trailer. But seeing it, I was like, something has happened to Peter Parker, and that's why Tony looks so upset. And so those are
stakes. No, it is the Peter Parker shot is in the trailer with the single tear.
Oh, is it? I thought it was him, like, sitting, being like, right before he goes, like, why did you do that to Strange?
That one's also in the trailer, but they use it as more like a damage shot. Oh, the okay. One that you're thinking of was in the first trailer. What amazes me is that you saw the first footage from Infinity War, and it includes Thanos throwing a moon at Iron Man, which if I was watching this movie, I'd be like, that's something people should see in theaters first.
Or, like, that trailer shot of Cap going, like, trying to hold off the gauntlet. That's like the very end of the movie.
They tried to fix that up by deleting stones from the glove in the trailer version.
Like, tricky.
Like, fun people.
All right. I think we kind of answered Jack's point, and we already started to answer Greg's question, but this is the last question before we head into our deep spoiler section of, like, future looking. Because the thing is, Dave is really good with informed speculation, so I just don't want you guys to stumble into something you're not ready for. So we're going to save that. But first, we're going to get to Greg's question, which is, if someone dies, what do you think of that choice? Was it transparently contractual, or did it serve the story? Does it make the MCU feel like it has plausible danger, or does everyone else feel safe? Okay, so here's something that we talked about a little bit when we got out of the movie, which is, like, I feel like if Loki stays dead, and Heimdall stays dead, and very crucially, Gamora stays dead, then this film will feel to me like it has stakes. I'm fine with every single person who turned, and Vision, I guess, and I'm fine with every single person who turned to ash coming back in Avengers 4. In fact, we know for certain most of them will, because they have sequels. But if Gamora is resurrected, I will be a little irritated by that. And that will, to me, feel like cheap-ass stakes. But the Ash thing, I mean, that seems like a dumb cliffhanger, but a cliffhanger of, like, Black Panther's coming back, don't worry, guys. We're gonna fix that. So, yeah, and then it's not transparently contractual. It's not as if, like, Scarlett Johansson, Chris Evans, Robert Downey, in fact, like, a lot of people who have their contract up are the people who survived, because they're, like, the main core Avengers. And so we have our main core, like, Black Widow, Iron Man, Thor, Cap, Hulk are all, like, solid.
Presumably flesh. Hawkeye, who isn't in the movie at all.
Presumably Hawkeye, who was under, Clint was under house arrest, as was Scott Lang. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, so it didn't feel like, oh, okay, their contract's up, so they had to die. It, in fact, the opposite feels true. So does it make the MCU feel like it is plausible danger? Does everyone else feel safe? I mean, we feel like, you know, this ashy shit is going to be undone. But like I said, I mean, you think Gamora's coming back. I think she should stay down.
I don't know if she's coming back. I just think that it's possible within the realm. I think, to be completely cynical about it, Guardians of the Galaxy doesn't work as well if Peter Quill's just being a dick to everybody for no reason. Like, you kind of need him to want to be good for somebody. And I don't think that's going to be the teenage tree or the raccoon. So you kind of need Gamora for that piece. I don't think Nebula, even if she were to join the Guardians, officially fits that piece. As gross and sexist as it is, I think you need that piece in there. I'd be totally open to a working Guardians 3 that doesn't have Gamora in it. It's something I don't foresee at the moment.
Peace only became a problematic word, like, the very last time you used it after you were like, I don't mean to be sexist, but we need a piece in there. Yeah, you do need a lady.
Like a puzzle piece with lots of curves.
Well, I mean, you'll have Mantis and, yeah, presumably you'll have Nebula. And then there's possibility of Peter Quill wanting to be good for, like, the memory of Gamora. But it does feel a little like fridging her. I mean, to be honest with you. But
I mean, I think there's a reason that she dies, but we're going to have to talk about that in the next section.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about the various deaths and who they chose to kill and who they didn't.
I think it's going to be the thing that people are talking about immediately after the movie, because it's very, very comic booky in that you're aware of the meta narrative that it is the sequel people that dissolve. And then the movie knows that so much that it knows it has like maybe 3 minutes before that dawns on you. So it actually dawns on you in the middle of the credits, I feel, because you're waiting for the end credits scene and there are so many people to credit that you're sitting there and it's dawning on you. You're like, wait a minute. So I know there's a Spider-Man Homecoming 2 coming out. Like, wait a minute. Robert Downey Jr. doesn't have any more films on his Marvel contract. Wait a minute. Doctor Strange said this was the only way. Like, those are all things that I think are meant to dawn on you during the credits, and it's very comic booky, but like comic books and unlike blockbuster movies up until now, that is part of the selling point, is knowing that you've just invested time in something that's ongoing for now and maybe forever.
All right. So those, is there anything else we want to talk about? God, there's so much that happens in Infinity. Good use of Wong, right? Like in and out.
We're just like, well, we lost. No one's protecting the Sanctum, so I'll see you later.
I'm not in the rest of the movie. Bye. But I did like that Iron Man was like, you're invited to my wedding, Wong. That was a pretty cute moment. Overall, I liked the humor beats. I don't think that any humor beats stuck out to me. I mean, I guess the most egregious one is, let's stop in the middle of the Battle of Wakanda and be like, new hair? Oh, I see you're copying my beard. I mean, like, delivered well, but I'm like, really, guys? Really, bros?
I like Rocket saying that he's going to get Bucky's arm, because like after two movies of establishing that Rocket has like some weird attachment to like body parts, that mechanical body parts you could take off, that's like, it seemed to me like the perfect balance between two characters that really have no reason to meet, but then like clicking for the one line that they had to click for and then moving on.
It's not as good as like Groot with a machine gun Rocket on his shoulder, but like Buck spinning Rocket around was pretty good. I'm gonna get that arm was a great line reading, and Rocket actually was, I thought, fantastic all the way through this thing. All the Guardians' reactions to Thor calling him Pirate Angel, all of that, like that, it all worked really well. So good job, James Gunn. Peter Quill being the literal worst through all of that also worked really well. And so making the Guardians sort of mix with the Avengers, I think, worked better than it had any right to, and just sort of like taking a moment to respect the thought that they put into the various mixing and matching that they did of characters, like, which Avengers do we want to have on Titan? Okay, which Guardians are going to be there? All that sort of stuff. And also not going too overboard with some of the something I meant to talk about in the pixels and polygon section was the way in which they use special effects to help us understand, like, which Infinity Stone is, color theory helps us with that, but like making that Infinity Stone glow extra brightly on the gauntlet when he's using it, or when all the stones are in there and you get the multicolored like veins running through his body. Like, yeah, I thought that was really, really cool. All right. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think that was Infinity War.
Here's my last question. If you're Wanda, okay, who in that little like sex vacation to Scotland, who do you think was doing the like reality bending? Was it Wanda or was it Vision?
I think it was Vision.
Okay. Say you're Vision and you want to impress this like really cute Sokovian teenager that you have decided to fall in love with. And I'm not going to talk nonsense about age difference because he's like a newborn baby android. So like, that's okay. Fine. They can be in love. Would you make yourself look like Paul Bettany now? Or would you make yourself look like Paul Bettany, like, A Knight's Tale era? Like, a little closer in age to her, is my question.
I wouldn't know because I'm a newborn baby android. So really, I would have to think that she requested it.
She's like, you know who I think is real cute?
Maybe like slightly older.
Paul Bettany.
Slightly old. There we go.
Oh, good. This fulfills my daddy issues. Have you ever
heard the voice of like the original Iron Man armor? Like I always pictured like a Paul Bettany.
It was nice. I mean, if this is it for Vision, which I think it is, it was nice that we got to see Paul Bettany's face, you know, his real face before he exited the franchise that he's been a part of for a decade. So good seeing you, Paul Bettany. Don't let the door hit your beautifully formed android ass on the way out of town. Shall we move to deeper spoilers and speculations?
Let's. How do you want to? Oh, chronologically. We're going to do it chronologically.
Boys and girls.
Which starts after the credits, where we catch up with Samuel Jackson, who was dead in Winter Soldier, then got better, and then we didn't see him for a while. Actually, no, we saw him in Avengers Age of Ultron, which takes place after? Yes. Yes, in the cabin. But then we don't see him for a while. Who knows what S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been up to? It ended up being Hydra. Then Samuel Jackson sort of disappeared, along with Colby Smulders, Maria Hill. But here they are back. They're in the middle of doing something. Just as they're about to say, call Clint and do something with Clint, there's a car crash in front of them. It turns out that half of the world is vanishing and turning into flakes because Thanos has snapped. Samuel Jackson is about to say, oh, fuck, before he dissolves.
Motherfucker, actually.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
Thank you. Before he dissolves while holding a pager, and we see the pager bring up the Captain Marvel logo. End.
She doesn't have a theme song yet, obviously, because she doesn't have a movie yet. But I was like, I did want like a music cue, just like when earlier in the film they go to Wakanda and you know they're going to Wakanda because the drums start going and you're like, yes, it's Wakanda time. Yeah. So Captain Marvel. I mean, the person who sitting next to me turned to me and was like, what's that? I was like, it's Captain Marvel. There was a rumor at some point that Brie Larson was going to be in this. And I know that like that scene that they filmed on the street there between Nick Fury and Maria Hill did make it online. And I think people thought, or I know that I thought it was from Captain Marvel, because I'll tell you this much right now, because Kobe Smulders is wearing a sweater that I definitely had in the 90s. It's this like ombre gap fade ribbed sweater that like could very much look like it's from the 90s. And a lot of people are like, oh, first filming of Captain Marvel. And I think Brie Larson was on. I think that's where we got the like turquoise suit shot of her and stuff like that, all of that, which was well before they announced that they had started filming. So I wonder if there was some version of this movie that ends with her rather than just the pager. But either way, we get the pager. Captain Marvel's coming in 2019.
That would have been the second Avengers movie in a row, right, that Captain Marvel got cut out of in post-production.
But they did, I mean, I think I can say this now because whatever. When we did our Marvel Vanity Fair cover story, like initially we were going to have Brie Larson and then they were like, wait, but she's not in Avengers 3. And so I believed them. Like, that's why we didn't have Brie Larson in the Vanity Fair stories, because they were like, she's not in Avengers 3. And a bunch of journalist friends I know were like, they're lying to us. I was like, I actually don't think they are because of that. Like, any other, like, time they said it, I would, in public facing, I would have believed them. But they told us, like, off the record that she wasn't in Avengers 3. So, but she is in Avengers 4. And obviously, she'll be in her own movie, Captain Marvel, coming next year. And one thing that we should talk about in terms of that is that in terms of the future of the franchise is that we know, well, we'll get to Captain Marvel. Sorry, let's go to Ant-Man and the Wasp first. Dave, what do you want to tell us about Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I still hope that we pop out of Quantum Realm into a post-Thanos reality. I still hope that Ant-Man and the Wasp takes place over a very abbreviated period of time. I'm thinking like days, and then whenever they come out of the climax in the quantum realm, they've actually lost a whole bunch of time, and they're post Thanos snap, which I think will shield everybody in the quantum realm, so all the Ant-Man characters can be safe. We also know from Sebastian Stan maybe talking too much that at least they will be in Avengers 4, both Wasps and both Ant-Men at some point. But yeah, I'm super happy that they're going to be able to keep it small. Not meaning a pun, and just do like a heist movie with the ghost who's the villain. And then I hope that whatever, you know, journey they're on to find Michelle Pfeiffer, leads directly in to, solving Infinity War. I still think that, I think we learned a lot in Infinity War by what was left unresolved, but hinted was out there, and what is going to make it through to Avengers 4.
So yeah, so they did, they mentioned that both Scott and Clint are under house arrest. This is the deal, like a you know, bargain they struck when, after Captain America broke them out of jail in the end of Civil War. And so we'll see Hawkeye later, apparently. And the thing that I thought of when they said Scott was under house arrest is I was like, cool, but you can still go to the quantum realm, like, from your house. It doesn't break the rules of your ankle bracelet, probably, if you go to the quantum realm, like, from within your house, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, Dave has had this theory for a while, right, that, like, I think we know that Ant-Man and the Wasp takes place starts before Infinity War, or at least concurrently with Infinity War, and then ends maybe, like, they come out of the quantum realm and, like, half of the existence has been wiped out. This is something I wanted to ask you. You alluded to this before. Something we thought of when you and I were sort of speculating about this off air, and hopefully you think this is okay for us to talk about publicly, was that, like, if Scott and, let's say, Hope were in the quantum realm when half of the all of existence was blanked out and they come out, perhaps they would retain the memory of the fact that there was, like, let me put it this way. If they come out of the quantum realm and reality has changed somehow, maybe they would remember something that other people would not. So my question is, all those people who turned to ash, is it like no one will remember they ever existed? Or, holy shit, I watched my friend Bucky turn to ash. The reason I think it's the latter, not the former, is Gamora definitely remembers. Well, he didn't turn them to ash, though. She definitely remembers, like, the genocide that happened on her planet. But, okay, yeah, so that's my question. Will Okoye remember that there was a T'Challa? Or does this just, like, erase the existence of T'Challa and now Shuri is, like, the ruler of Wakanda or whatever?
Could go either way. I would say the Thanos line, "I hope they remember you," is maybe
a hint
as to where that could possibly go. There's also some set photos that we've seen that shows Tony Stark with some frosted yellow hair, which doesn't seem like something a Tony Stark who's been traumatized by watching Spider-Man would do to his hair. So that makes me think that maybe not all memory, or maybe things fade, and maybe reality itself has been altered in some more extensive way. I don't think we know for sure, but I think that the possibility that Ant-Man and the Wasp can provide that connective tissue of...
I'd be like, Tony, don't you remember? Like, you used to have brown hair and blah, blah. Or, like, wasn't T'Challa the ruler of Wakanda? Like, stuff like that, right? Like, that kind of oriented stuff. Cap, you don't remember Bucky? He was, like, your best friend, remember? We all, you know, fought at that airport tarmac together? Okay.
Well, and it's also really good for Paul Rudd to do, because he's basically the Iron Man reverse. Like, Hank Pym is the not Howard Stark, and so Paul Rudd would be the not Tony Stark, and then would have to, you know, kind of show this other asshole what he was. I think that would be an interesting dynamic. I'm not sure if we have time for it anymore, but I don't really know where I would go with this beyond, I think, a few key points, but we could save that when we chronologically get to it, because we still have to talk about Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. Okay, the big complicating factor, correct me if I'm wrong, of Captain Marvel is that the villains in Captain Marvel are the Skrulls, which is a comic book villain, shape-shifting alien comic book villain that they've thought about doing for a long time in the MCU, but are finally getting around to. And what this could further complicate Avengers 4 in that we could have, first of all, Captain Marvel's a prequel. It takes place in the 90s. Secondly, we expect maybe Captain Marvel will end with her getting that page from Nick Fury from the future or from Concurrent. Who knows? But it's possible that Skrulls from Captain Marvel will be in Avengers 4 looking like characters we know, but actually are Skrulls, right?
That's my favorite crazy pants theory. Yeah.
Okay.
That Skrulls are that the Secret Invasion comic book plotline would somehow be echoed as a complicating factor of Avengers 4. The reason of that being the Infinity Gauntlet's powers and the extent obviously are still not very well defined even after having seen the movie. So things like memory and reality can be altered. Then you get to do the cool Skrulls have been embedded in this world for a long time. Retroactive continuity under the guise of your MacGuffin Infinity Stones from your crossover event, which is a very comic book thing to do and would make a lot of sense if this movie plays like a comic book crossover event, just to be like, not only is Thanos like a threat, but he's more of a threat as just possessing these all super powerful gems. He's already done his main thing. Our threat is getting things back to the way they were, and then we discover not only that, but they're invaders among us.
Invaders among us. All right. Last thing we're going to get to is Avengers 4, a.k.a. possibly Infinity Gauntlet, which might involve shape-shifting Skrulls and a frosted-tipped Tony Stark. Alternate timelines. I mean, I think it's safe, since we're like deep in the spoiler section, to say that there were like the set photos, some of the set photos at least that you're talking about, like were the Battle of New York. Like Cap is in his old Cap suit. Tony's got these frosted tips. They're in a decimated New York. So it's possible that like in blinking out half of existence, they never existed. So we will see how they did the Battle of New York without, never mind. Everyone was there.
The reason we would have to go back is it's using like the same technology that Tony Stark was using in Civil War see his parents.
Right.
So it wouldn't necessarily be go back to remember that the event happened. The event still happened, but there would be some sort of clue in it, or there would be some sort of falsity in what he changed. But there is an infinity. There were two Infinity Stones in New York at that time, so it might be a good time to travel back and take a look at what happened.
And I guess my last question about that is: so that would be the Tesseract and
the Mind Stone.
The Mind Stone,
because it was in the Scepter.
Right. Okay. That's really annoying that the Scepter and the Tesseract both had Infinity Stones in them. Okay. Last question, and you know you might have more to say after this, but. What are we going to see of Thanos in Avengers 4? Like, okay, so he goes to the afterlife and sees Baby Gamora. I thought the design on Baby Gamora was great. But he's not dead. He's a lakeside somewhere, and he's grinning. And he's still, the gauntlet was, like, smooshed, but not destroyed. He still got the gauntlet, right?
He didn't
in the afterlife. He looked and he's like, oh, huh, my hand, my big purple hand.
But then when he went through the portal, he definitely still had like a burnt gauntlet.
Yeah, so he's got the burnt gauntlet. So he still has, so like any other reality fuckery could still be coming from Thanos in theory. But he got what he wanted, so I don't know why. Like he pitched it as sort of like, oh no, this is all I want to do. I'm not a bad guy. I have a plan. I have a plan for overpopulation, and it's this. But what do you think Thanos' role is going to be in Avengers 4?
I think, so there's no sense in doing another battle movie. So I think that we have to recollect, and then we have to basically wield the Infinity Gauntlet to correct things. So that means that you're going to have to take it from Thanos at some point. I think that showdown is enough. Like, if you break down what happens in New Infinity War into just plot beats, not a lot, like, happens. like, Thanos is coming. What's he coming for? These two things. He tries to get the two things. He tries to get the two things again. He gets the two things. End of movie. So it's like, if you just look at it like that, get the gauntlet back from Thanos, I think that's the plot point. That's the only plot point that Thanos needs to be around for. His arc's done. I don't think there's a lot to be gained in doing a more comic book faithful adaptation where he just makes himself a space throne and monologues about the power of being God a lot. I think the movies are beyond that. I would say we're mostly done with Thanos. I'm really interested in what Avengers Infinity War 3 tosses into the air and then doesn't let land. Iron Man never calls Captain America. We never know what's happening to Clint, obviously. We learn that in order to wield the Soul Stone, which only Thanos successfully does in all of recorded history, you have to sacrifice something you love. So in order to wield it against Thanos, someone's going to have to sacrifice another Avenger, right? So obviously there's a death built into Avengers 4. There's a self-sacrifice that feels like it's going to be Cap. There's all these like little balls that go slightly into the air. The biggest one probably is that like Doctor Strange saw this happening and we're still potentially in the one out of 6 million
and a half, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, different possibilities. Like the one that where we win still has Tony Stark alive, trapped on Titan at this point. So I think we're all on course. The weird thing is Kevin Feige and the producers have been saying, like, we don't want to say more about Avengers 4 because I think, like, Avengers 3 is going to kind of lead you into what Avengers 4 is going to be about. And then, like, right after the movie, I'm like, that was way too vague. But as I'm starting to get, like, more hours in between me and this film, I'm like, no, actually, you know what? I think it does. Knowing that the two movies in between here and there are prequels and knowing that we're immediately picking up where we left off, with a surveying of the actual consequences, I do kind of know what Avengers 4 is going to be like. I don't know the plot turns and whatnot, but I feel like the motion of it is all there. We used to think that back in the day when this is all announced that Avengers 4 would be about setting up the new Avengers and setting up the new status quo. It's not. It's the conclusion. We thought that this would be the movie that Cap, Thor, and Iron Man would bite it so they could bring them back and have them do the real sacrifice in Avengers 4. Didn't go that way, but I still think that Avengers 4 sort of ends similarly. The reason I brought up the wedding thing, that's actually a Shakespearean rule for comedy, not all Shakespeare, but I do think there is a possibility of ending this with a wedding because I think whatever Tony Stark learns, he's going to learn to abdicate his responsibility, which puts him in a really good place to be the Avenger that shows up occasionally, but you know, not doesn't have to be a main character anymore.
So you think they're gonna keep Robert Downey Jr. on retainer to occasionally Robert Downey Jr.
I think the connection
the richest man alive, but like I just think it's hard for me to believe that any of the current Avengers, Thor, Cap, Black Widow, Iron Man, Hawkeye apparently has no trouble hanging up his bow occasionally, would keep out of a fight. Like, the question about Captain Marvel, if she shows up now, is where the fuck has she been all these other conflicts, right?
Well, she's been, I mean, the planet that we go to find the Red Skull on is in the Kree Empire, so they're planting their space, and Captain Marvel's a Kree superhero, so there's some space that, like, obviously would have also been affected by the snapping, but there's also, like, some sort of weird catastrophe going on out there. Otherwise, she would have been here the whole time.
The cops heard all the spoilers that you have been dropping, and they're here for you.
The cops are aware of the Thanos hashtag. Thanos demands your silence.
The last thing that I was going to say about this is, I just have a hard time believing in your... I mean, no, you know what? Fuck it. It's a podcast. I'm going to place a bet with you right now.
Oh?
That this doesn't end with a Tony Pepper wedding. And Tony, like, just retiring, you know, his closet just full of shirts and no iron suit. I get that that's like the whole thrust in Pepper's League. You gotta learn, and in order to get the girl, he hangs up his suit and blah blah. But like, I just don't. I can't see Tony like giving up the fight, and there being like another big fight, and it's got to be like T'Challa and Stephen Strange and like, you know, Scott Lang doing the fight without him. You know, I don't know. So,
I mean, I think that. Is totally. I mean, they're setting it up from a story-wise possibility.
I hear you.
Okay, so then
I see what you're seeing. I just think that I will have a huge. I don't think that that's what I see. Why you think this is going to happen? I don't think this was going to happen, and I also think I would have a huge problem with a Tony Stark existing out there and not joining in the fights to come.
Well, let me walk you a little further down the line of interconnected storytelling. So. There's Thanos, and he has the glove, and he sacrificed his child to wield the Soul Stone, and he says he recognizes Tony Stark, and he like recognizes something in Tony Stark, because Tony Stark's going to be the person in Avengers 4 who has to wield the gauntlet to defeat Thanos and to set everything back right. He's not going to want to do it. Cap's going to abdicate some sort of responsibility because Tony Stark's going to have to kill Captain America to use the Soul Stone, and he's not going to kill Pepper because he's
that's
Tony Stark.
The thing that Tony loves is Steve Rogers.
That's the alternative to Pepper.
Not Peter Parker. I guess Peter Parker's not there.
All I'm saying is that you have Cap
like
and Iron
list,
Man at odds. They're the two
like,
Avengers.
What about Rhodey? I feel like the list of what did Rhodey get ashed? I feel like, no, he didn't. I feel like the list of what Tony Stark loves has so many entries on it above Steve Rogers. And like for Thanos...
The foreshadowing of what the stories have been about means that the broken shield that Tony sees in his vision in Age of Ultron is leading to him having to betray or kill Captain America. And I don't think that's Civil War. I think that's Avengers 4.
You're like convincing me, but it's irritating me.
I mean, that's why I'm not trying to convince you because I think it's like the best thing that's going to happen. I'm just trying to get you to see that this is a two-part movie that threw some things up in the air. And I don't think you have them talk about getting married and maybe having a kid not in the movie you kill her in. And I think it'd be weird to spend a lot of time after half of existence has been blinked out to reestablish domestic Tony Stark as a want in time to kill Pepper and have that be climactic. I think what we're building to is, you know, a whole bunch of movies that leads Iron Man to actually kill Captain America.
I mean, here's what we can all agree on. Captain America's gonna die.
Yeah.
Chris Evans wants the fuck out. Cap's gonna die. Doesn't it make so much more sense for Bucky to kill him, though? Like, I agree with your foreshadowing of, like, Tony Stark being the one to wield the gauntlet. It makes sense. He's our prime hero, all this sort of stuff. But, like, I feel like it's got to be something like, I don't know, Donald Noble and Doctor Who, where you got to, like, he's got to be, like, a make-me-forget in order to finally get out of the game. But Bucky killing Cap, I mean, that doesn't seem like it's going to happen because he's already gone, and so, like... Yeah, I guess what's true is that even though we believe all these people are coming back for their sequels, like, you know, and Sebastian Stan, I think, still has 900 more movies on his Marvel contract. But, like, I guess they're not coming back probably till the end of Avengers 4, until they do whatever they need to do with the Infinity Gauntlet. And so the cast of Avengers 4 is actually going to be, like, deeply pared down.
I think the cast of Avengers 4 is the people that didn't
Ash.
Get complete acts.
Plus,
like,
Clint.
We got to spend so much time
Scott.
With
Clint and
Scarlet
Scott,
Witch
yeah.
and Vision because they don't have to have their arcs are done. Spent a lot of time with Thanos because his arc is basically done. Gamora and Nebula, their arcs are basically done. The Guardians, arcs are
Nebula's,
done.
No, Nebula's in Avengers 4. She survived, anyway.
Yes, but I don't think she has a key role to play. I think she's a side character like Rhodey was in this one. Like, characters that are also there, but, like,
well,
there's some characters
the
like...
of Rhodey, can we just talk about, like, how they had the two black characters speak to each other a lot? This is like, it's like, hey, Falcon, hey, Rhodey, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, I don't know. I was just like...
Oh, yeah, there's some major problems in, like, how they chose to pare down Wakanda fights. It's like, okay, black guys together, then the women together, and then once the other woman comes down, we realize that was the big mistake everybody was waiting for.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. That's it, right?
Yeah, I think so, we'll at see. Least I for mean, now.
I'm going to stick with my bet that like it doesn't end with the wedding of Pepper and Tony. You're going to stick with the bet that it does. And we'll see each other in 2019, if not before.
And we'll never, we certainly won't spend another year talking about what could possibly Avengers 4 be about. Well, we definitely won't be revisiting it in July, and we definitely won't be revisiting it next February for a female-led superhero movie. That just does not sound like us.
No, very off-brand. And I also feel like maybe we should maybe have like a... at least a small section for Infinity War next week so that poor Neil can, you know, give some thoughts on it. Our thoughts go out to our friend Neil, who's been turned to ash by some sort of, I don't know, illness. But we'll resurrect him. What did Thanos say? No resurrections this time.
No resurrections this time.
No resurrections this time. All right.
Lies. Lies in the first 10 minutes.
All right. Well, even though this is your job, I'm going to do it. That's it for this Thought Bubble episode of Storm of Spoilers on Infinity War. I hope you enjoyed all of the spoilers that we dished up for you here. I hope you really lived up to our Storm of Spoilers name. Until next week, Dave, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at DA7E, where I'll be pinning any of my writing about Infinity War. And then also find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com.
I think you, I mean, can I say where you will have some written Infinity War coverage?
Yeah.
Over on Thrillist.com.
Hey.
So, yeah, I will have some Infinity War coverage over on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JoeWroteThis. Once again, if you are pining for some Westworld theories, you can hear me talk about them on the Decoding Westworld podcast and also Still Watching : Westworld. So two Westworld podcasts for your pleasure. Finally, if you want to hear what Neil thinks about things, he already has some thoughts up on his Twitter feed, which is at Rejects, or you can find him on FilmSchoolRejects.com. Until next week, what do we say?
Oh, you know what we say.
What do we say?
Don't fall down.
Don't fall down.